Got her again.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
I love you, Solo!
Mama Monster.
Conquered my home!
You like fighting a woman?
You got grown-ass wrestlers in the back going on Twitter.
Come over here and fight me.
I have the best moveset.
You have legs.
They've made Solo a monster.
I was 99% positive it was just chest up.
Yeah. I want out of my contract if I don't get what I want.
It's the annual prediction show and the annual Sound Off holiday extravaganza, starting with Festivus tomorrow, then we have Christmas, and Hanukkah gets a late start this year on Christmas night. It is Sunday, December 22nd, 2024. Santa Sala Monster comes bearing gifts, the gift of the Sound Off, my gift to all of you, in the form of episode 893, Santa Has Seen Better Days. We had a packed house at the NYC Arena on Friday night for House of Glory, shoulder to shoulder, standing room only, our biggest crowd all year for the return of Matt and Jeff Hardy, the TNA World Tag Team Champions and former HOG Tag Team Champions many years ago. We had a surprise appearance by the AEW Tag Team Champions, Private Party, House of Glory alum. My thanks to them, by the way, for coming out to try to save me a little late. I got the shit kicked out of me by the HOG Tag Team Champions, and rest assured, there will be a price to be paid for that, but I wasn't planning on waking up on the mat in a sea of blood and broken glass. At least the blood all over me wasn't my own. It was from the cage match right before. You know, me and Cody Rhodes both being carried out to an ambulance within the same week was not on my bingo card. New York is a dangerous place, so I'm a little sore. And I'm sorry I missed the rest of the show, but it was a great night otherwise. The replay is up on Triller TV. And I will repeat what I said out in the ring. 2024 was our best year ever. And 2025 is shaping up to be even better than that. And we will see you in Chicago on January 17th with Ricky Starks against Mike Santana. And then back in New York on January 25th with Ricky Starks, as well as the return of Kenta. You can get your tickets at hogwrestling.net. And to the guy in the crowd who shouted he would make a PayPal donation to me as they were carrying me out of the arena, I'm still waiting. If you would like to make a PayPal donation, or if he would like to make a PayPal donation, you can always do so on thesolemonster.com. Click the PayPal link at the top of the page. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. I want to wish all of my PayPal producers a very happy holiday season and a very happy new year, including Big B Bryant Becerra, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine Harrison Soap, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, the Portland Pop Star Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker Nayef Alsafar, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, Iowan Corn Farmer Jesse Lamphere, Peacemaker Steve Cliff, who first discovered the show 10 years ago. Thank you, Steve. Best in the Game, Trey Porter. Killshot, Keith Hart. The Seattle Saint, Marco Wallace, who has been listening religiously to the Sound Off since he was 16 years old. Today he turns 27. That's amazing. Happy birthday, Marco. I hope it's a great one. And thank you for all the support this year on Tuesday Night Titans with JD. I joined the show in May. And it has been a great success, a lot of great engagement, doing 40 to 50,000 views a week pretty consistently. And that's only going to grow stronger now that we are headed into WrestleMania season. So we just had our last show this past week, and TNT will return the day after the Raw Netflix debut. So there will be a lot to discuss on Tuesday, January 7th. I am going to be doing predictions later for 2025, but let me lead off with this. I did not get to do a SmackDown review on Friday night for obvious reasons, but I caught up with the show from my hospital bed, and I didn't miss much. A total nothing show. They taped it last week to give the crew off this week for the holidays, which is nice, but if I had to miss a show, I'm glad it was this one. The only thing of note was a pre-taped Kevin Owens promo with the Winged Eagle belt, where he blamed Cody, he blamed Nick Aldis, and he blamed the referees for screwing him out of the WWE title on Saturday night's main event. He had a visual pin for like a 7 count at one point in that match, but the referee was down. And he says that he should be right now the undisputed WWE champion. So he took the belt because he deserves it. People say he snapped. He says, I haven't snapped. It could get so much worse. And whatever happens next, he said, is on WWE management. So he has not even gone completely unhinged yet. What else may Kevin Owens do? We don't know. This was fine. There's only so much they could do since he couldn't, well, go out in front of the live crowd and do anything because this was taped before Saturday night's main event. So they basically took the week off. Then there was Ring of Honor Final Battle at the Hammerstein Ballroom. I hate that new paint job they did a while back. It just doesn't look the same anymore. It's just like this lifeless gray. It's still a great wrestling venue, though. I wish they would have painted it a different color. And I've not had the chance to watch the entire show. I just wanted to see the Nigel McGuinness match when I found out that he was a surprise on the show. He had a match with Lee Moriarty, who apparently has been the Pure champion since July. I didn't know he had been the champion for that long. And he had a mystery challenger, which turned out to be Nigel, who is no stranger to the Pure title. He's the longest reigning Pure champion in Ring of Honor history. It's just cool to see Nigel back wrestling again. You know, after such a long layoff, you know, he came out there at Wembley, got that great reception, had the match with Bryan Danielson, and now, you know, here he is wrestling almost 20 minutes for the Pure title, like it's 2009 all over again. So they had a great match. Moriarty won. I watched the Ring of Honor title match with Chris Jericho and Matt Cardona. A battle between a champion that has defended the ROH title once on Dynamite and a challenger that has never even competed in Ring of Honor before Friday night. Jericho got Tony Khan to shell out God knows how much money for the rights to Frank Sinatra's New York, New York for his entrance. And they had a match that I think they were expecting a super hot Hammerstein crowd to help get this over as a classic, kind of one-night stand style, and it wasn't anywhere close to that. The lame finish didn't help. They had Brian Keith whack Cardona in the head with the belt, and then Jericho stole the win. I don't think Cardona's contract status has anything to do with the finish, because if you look, you know, this outcome and the main event outcome, I think Tony wants his titles on certain people until he gets his TV deal that he's still working towards. So Jericho retains, and the first spot of the match was Cardona hitting his radio silence finish to Jericho, the Rough Rider. If he would have gotten the pin and won the title right then and there, like not 30 seconds into this, after Jericho took 5 minutes plus parading around to Sinatra, this would have been 5 stars. Like, that would have been fantastic. But they didn't do it. Then Bandido comes out and he makes his return. Now, Bandido is a former Ring of Honor world champion, so at least he has some connection to the promotion. But those great vignettes that they've done for him have all aired on Dynamite. But he makes his return to Ring of Honor. He's been out for a year and a half. And the first thing he does is a missile drop kick to take out Jericho, and he smacks the back of his head hard on the mat. Like, it was a rough landing. And so what was supposed to happen is he was supposed to get right back up and take out the rest of the learning tree. But it was clear that something was wrong. He was very slow to get up, and he looked a little woozy, and you could see Brian Keith kind of crouched down in the corner waiting, like, all right, what's going on here? I don't know if he just rung his bell or if he actually concussed himself. But boy, that would suck if he concussed himself and he's going to be out again. Because like I said, he's been gone for almost 18 months. 2 surgeries, you know, all that time away, he comes back. And then for him to be out again would just be death. But this just completely fell apart at that point, and it just fell totally flat. Everything about this from the end of the match onward to all the post-match stuff was just a complete fail. And then we got the main event with Athena defending her Ring of Honor Forever title. She's been the champion for over 700 days and counting. against Billy Starks. This was a rematch from last year's final battle where Athena beat Billy. This is a story with these two women that has been playing out for more than a year now. Okay, they had that match last year. Billy went into it. She's still very young. She was the underdog, really, you know, showed a lot in that match and was very impressive, but she fell just short, right? It felt like the beginning of her story. And then over the past year, you know, again, I haven't been following every little twist and turn, but I know that she was Athena's minion and then she broke away from her again. And so it's been building slowly but surely into this year's final battle to the point where here they got the main event spot to close the show. So they're in the main event. They were in New York. They're at the Hammerstein Ballroom. Everything about this screamed title change. Everything about this screamed happy ending for the live crowd. And then Athena won again. I mean, it would be like Cody Rhodes going to WrestleMania this year and losing to Roman Reigns again, only in front of 1,400 people instead of 60,000. Now, again, I admit I don't follow Ring of Honor week to week, but I know enough of the story with these two, and it's not like Athena hasn't been champion for so long that the stage was set, the stars were aligned, and when I saw that she won again, I was just floored. Absolutely flabbergasted by that decision. The match itself was very good, but I mean, it fell apart there at the end. There was a rough-looking Poison Rana by Athena, and then Billy took an exposed turnbuckle, or at least she was supposed to. She completely missed it. And it sucked because it led right into the finish, too. So it wasn't even like a throwaway spot. It was like it was leading directly into the finish of the match, which made it worse. And Athena hits the O-face and pins her to retain the title. Truly, I don't know what Tony Khan was thinking there, other than we might get a TV deal soon, and I want to keep my titles on who he feels are the strongest possible names in case we do. And Jericho has the established name, so I want my world title on him. And we've invested all this time in Athena and this long run, and I don't feel like it's the right time to end it just yet. Like that's the only thing in my head that I can possibly imagine is going through Tony Khan's mind. I know Athena in the post-show scrum talked about going to the Tokyo Dome in a few weeks. She's in that four-way match at Wrestle Dynasty, and then she might spend a little more time in Japan. And so maybe Tony wants her going around with the Ring of Honor world title. But this was the moment for her to drop that title. Let her go off to Japan for a little while. And when she comes back, get her on AEW television. Just a mind-boggling finish. Now let's talk WWE. There was an investigative piece published this week in The Athletic, which is owned by the New York Times, so it appeared there too. At least online it did. A long story about Lee Fitting, WWE's head of media and production. And he is the man who Nick Khan brought in to replace Kevin Dunn, who left the company in January, only weeks before the Janelle Grant sex trafficking lawsuit was filed against Vince McMahon and WWE. And he was not happy about Endeavor cutting costs, especially in production, and looking to streamline things on the production end, which had always been an area that he had control over. And the moment he lost that power, he headed for the exits. He could see the writing on the wall. There was only one master that he served, and now he was going to have to answer to all these new people and this big company coming in, and he didn't want to do it, so he decided to retire. And Nick Khan has hired a lot of people from the sports world, including Joe Tessitore, his most recent acquisition. And Lee Fitting had spent 27 years working for ESPN before being let go in August of 2023. And he oversaw production for tons of shows, Monday Night Football, College Game Day being the main one. And he was fired just 5 days before the kickoff of the college football season last year, which was very curious why they would fire the guy in charge of overseeing its college football coverage less than a week before kickoff, especially after almost 30 years there. You knew something bad must have happened. That doesn't just happen because, oh, we're doing layoffs. Sorry, Lee. And at the time, it wasn't revealed why they got rid of him, but that didn't stop Nick Khan from hiring him and scooping him up and making him their new head of production. Then, only days after he was hired this year, it was The Athletic, again, that broke the story that dating back to at least 2010, ESPN had been using fake names on entries for sports Emmy awards and then taking the awards won by some of those imaginary employees. They would pull off the phony names and they would have them re-engraved with their real names, and then they would hand them out completely unbeknownst to the talent that was getting the award. So imagine you're one of these reporters and you're getting an Emmy award and it's got your name on it and you got the statue sitting on your mantle and you're so proud. And you come to find out, again, these people had no knowledge of what was going on. You come to find out about this scam, and they had to give back the awards, over 30 of them. Lee Fitting was one of the people involved in that scam. And that's what it was. It was a scam. Now, I talked about it at the time that this all came out. The way it would work is with College Game Day, for example, the entry for Best Studio Show would list several different people who worked on that show. But these people didn't actually exist. Emmy rules say that you cannot double dip. What that means is you can't be eligible to win two awards for the same thing. They have to have separate categories for on-air talents on those shows. What they were doing were disguising the on-air talents with phony names. So not only could they be eligible for Emmys in their own categories, but in the category for the show itself. So for example, you have Lee Corso. Right. If you're a College Game Day viewer or a college football fan, you know who Lee Corso is. They submitted the name Lee Clark. And then for Aaron Andrews, they used Eric Andrews and so on and so forth. And the Emmy people eventually caught on to what they were doing and they alerted ESPN, who admitted to what was going on. They got caught. And the belief is that Lee Fitting is now banned from future Emmy eligibility. So this was not only a huge black eye for ESPN, it was a black eye for WWE. Only days after they hired him is when this all broke. So it sounded like, okay, we found our reason why he was fired from ESPN. Until this latest story dropped from The Athletic, and we didn't even know the half of it. Turns out, he was fired after years of misconduct behind the scenes at ESPN, making sexually suggestive and inappropriate comments towards women. Comments that may seem like locker room talk, but no normal person would make these kinds of comments in a business setting, if for no other reason, because they wouldn't want to lose their job. But he was the golden boy there. And it sounds like he was able to get away with it because of how high up on the food chain he was. And people didn't want to say anything about it for fear of losing their own jobs. Until someone finally filed a complaint with their HR department, which led to an internal investigation, and he was fired shortly thereafter. It says here, through a spokesperson, Fitting denied some of the allegations to The Athletic while not addressing others. He also declined to comment on the broader characterization of him as someone who mistreated women during his tenure at ESPN or why he was let go by the network. The outlet spoke to more than 20 women, six of which were spoken with as part of the HR investigation. Among the accusations addressed in the full story here, in 2012, some employees were watching the NCAA men's basketball tournament from a conference room when Fitting allegedly commented on a woman who was not present and did not work at ESPN and her ability to, quote, open her throat to down a beer, then joked that the woman would be good at oral sex. Fitting denies this ever happened. In a 2014 production meeting, no chairs were available for a woman on staff. Fitting patted his lap and said to her, "I've got a seat right here for you." According to one person in the room and another person who was told about the remark from someone who was present, Fitting denies this ever happened. One female ESPN employee said that Fitting sent her a text message around 2018 that read, "You look hot." She showed the text to a producer who recalled the woman's hand shaking as she showed the producer the message. On more than one occasion, he jokingly asked a female staffer for her hotel room number and also routinely joked about performing bed checks, according to College Game Day employees. Fitting has denied those allegations. He also allegedly bragged about his and his wife's robust sex life, according to multiple sources. When he saw a woman in an outfit that he liked, he would let her know, sometimes in ways women and other employees found crude and/or humiliating. He once loudly exclaimed, "God damn," when a woman appeared on set in a skirt that he liked. These types of comments were so frequent that one female College Game Day employee developed a strategy to blunt his behavior. Whenever he would say or do something inappropriate, she would open up a notebook and mimic writing something down. When Fitting would ask what she was doing, she would respond, "Just jotting this down for the book." One woman said that one day, when she and Fitting were working in different locations, he had seen her on an in-house feed and texted her that he liked her hair in a ponytail. She brushed off the comment, but he texted again, "Put your hair up in a ponytail." The woman replied that she had already been in hair and makeup for the day, to which she said that Fitting responded, "Put your hair up in a ponytail before I do it for you." Another woman said Fitting, in addition to commenting on her makeup and wardrobe, told her that she should refrain from laughing on air because he found her laugh annoying. Fitting's spokesperson said it was his job to provide feedback to male and female on-air talent regarding their appearance and on-air delivery. One ESPN employee said that around 2017, she asked Fitting if she can meet with him in New York to discuss work opportunities. She said that he then asked via text whether he should get a hotel room for the night, which she interpreted as him asking if he should get a room for the two of them. She decided to drop the matter and the meeting never happened. Fitting, via his spokesperson, said that the woman misinterpreted his question. He was asking if he should reserve a conference room at the hotel. The woman disclosed that interaction to a male executive at ESPN. However, she decided not to report the matter to HR and asked the male executive to keep her disclosure quiet. That executive has corroborated her account. "I was trying so hard to keep the job and get more opportunities," said the woman. "You get blackballed if you say anything. Are they going to keep me or Lee Fitting?" And there are other examples they cite in the story, but you get the gist of it. Kendra Barkoff-Lamy, the spokesperson for Janelle Grant, who was the one who sued Vince McMahon, released the following statement about the story. "How can WWE claim they are committed to improving the company's culture and at the same time hire a man earlier this year who was accused of sexual misconduct and workplace harassment in his previous role? The allegations against Lee Fitting during his time at ESPN are extremely concerning. Revelations like this are why Janelle Grant's lawyer sent a letter to WWE and Endeavor, urging them to release all current and former employees from their NDAs. The same old boys club who enabled Janelle's abuse are continuing to put alleged predators in leadership roles, and this pattern must change once and for all." Boy, I'll bet they're having second thoughts about adding that man's name to the credits at the end of all their shows. Look, this is embarrassing for WWE because it means one of two things. Either they didn't do their due diligence before hiring this man, or they knew about this stuff and they just didn't care and they hired him anyway. Either way, it's not a good look. But to bring somebody like this in at a time when the chairman of the company was already in hot water for hush money payments and inappropriate sexual behavior, let alone 2 weeks after you hired this guy, that same chairman is hit with a sex trafficking lawsuit. To hire someone with this type of history is just beyond stupid. You know, her lawyers are talking about the company culture. Janelle Grant's lawyers are talking about the company culture. This doesn't do WWE any favors. This is something a simple background check would have flagged. I mean, the fact that he spent 27 years there and right before the college football season, he gets fired from his job, that alone should have set off alarm bells for them. There's a reason why you list references on your resume when you apply for a job. Like, this company needs to double and triple check these people from now on with the history they have of slime balls and predators that have worked there. They got to work extra hard. You'd think they would be extra sensitive to that, but again, at best, they were negligent. At worst, they just didn't care. They didn't give a damn. You know, he had the ESPN pedigree. He was available. They needed a new head of production, and he checked all the boxes. And to his credit, look, he's done a great job of upgrading their production and making it more sports-like, and the drone shots and the long uninterrupted shots that we sometimes get from the aisleway to the ring and around the ring. We get a lot less shaky cam and camera cuts than we used to get under Kevin Dunn. Like, I like what they've done with the show. But you can't claim to want to improve the culture in your company and at the same time continue to hire people that have almost two dozen women speaking out about how creepy you are. Now, WWE has not responded to requests for comment on the story, and there's no indication of whether this type of behavior has continued this year during his time in WWE. You know, if they were serious about cleaning out the riffraff, they would get rid of this guy. But to get rid of him would be to admit that they didn't do their homework when they hired him in the first place. Nick Khan and Triple H, they both put their stamp of approval on this guy. They talked him up big time when they hired him. They come out of this looking just as terrible. This is a billion-dollar company that we're supposed to believe is outsourcing their background checks to a Google search. Like, is it really that hard to find somebody that isn't a piece of shit? Like, I know there are people out there who are probably very qualified to do that job. Very capable people that they could hire to do the same thing that he does that don't bring the baggage and PR headaches that this guy does. I don't understand why that's so hard. According to a story in Variety, the return of Saturday night's main event did well in the ratings for NBC. The two-hour broadcast pulled in 2.3 million viewers on Saturday night between 8 and 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. That includes 1.59 million viewers on NBC and an additional 700,000 who streamed it live on Peacock. By comparison, the NBA Cup semifinal matchup between the Houston Rockets and the Oklahoma City Thunder averaged 1.89 million viewers on ABC alone, according to Nielsen data. This marked the first Saturday night's main event since 2008. That event, which aired on NBC only, drew 2.4 million viewers. Television was also very different in 2008 than it is in 2024. That's why in 2008, I looked it up, the first night Raw went up against Monday Night Football that year, Raw averaged 4.4 million viewers. This year, up against the first night of Monday Night Football, Raw averaged 1.4 million viewers. TNA Impact did 1.4 million viewers that week in 2008. Think about that. Today, the Impact numbers are small enough they don't even get reported anymore. But they also probably have more people watching the show on their TNA Plus service than they do on Access TV. Back then, they were on Spike. They had a lot more visibility. But it just goes to show you how different things were back then as far as the landscape than it is today. But we don't know if those 700,000 viewers on Peacock were actually watching the show or they just logged in for, you know, any one part of the program that they haven't said. We just have to take what they tell us at face value. Which is exactly what we're going to have to do when it comes to the numbers that Raw does on Netflix starting January 6th. We're just going to have to take their word for it. Or will we? The Athletic is reporting that when Netflix airs its two NFL games on Christmas Day this week, they will be tracked by Nielsen and ratings will be reported for them. I don't know if they will be doing the same thing for Monday Night Raw, but there's at least a chance that we may not yet be done with the Raw ratings going forward. I was actually kind of looking forward to not seeing the online discourse anymore about that, but it appears that we may not be done with that yet. One thing we do know is that starting early next year, Netflix will no longer be reporting its subscriber numbers as part of its quarterly earnings. That's something that they announced earlier this year. WWE also made it official this week, what we already knew, which is that SmackDown is moving to 3 hours every single week, starting with the January 3rd episode from Phoenix, Arizona. A little piece of me died hearing that news, even though I already knew it was coming. Less is more. When money is involved, I know they don't care, but less is more. I say it all the time. Especially on those weekends where they have a Saturday night's main event, or if they have a PLE that Saturday, to go from a 3-hour SmackDown on a Friday to a 3-hour plus PLE the next day, I mean, that's just going to be brutal. But it's all about the money and whatever the network wants, and they're certainly making a lot of money off this Netflix deal, and they hosted its Netflix kickoff event on Wednesday at WWE headquarters in Stamford. They invited fans to attend, which I'm sure pleased all of the employees that work there to no end, to have a bunch of wrestling fans running around the offices. Triple H gave a rah-rah speech and talked about the road to WrestleMania next year being unlike anything we've ever seen before. He said Michael Cole and other people like to call this the Paul Levesque era, but it's really our era. Yeah. As if all those mentions of the Paul Levesque era at WrestleMania this year were just off the cuff. Yeah, all these people, they love to mention my name. I don't know why they keep doing this, but it's not my era. It's our era. Just kissing up to the fans. But that's what you do. When you're in a leadership position, you kiss up to the fans. He brought out the Raw general manager, Adam Pearce, to announce Logan Paul as the newest member, the newest addition to the Monday Night Raw roster. So no, he is not retired, even though he claimed he was retired on his podcast last week. You can't take what he says on there seriously. I don't know why people did. But he's not retired, so now Logan Paul follows his brother Jake to Netflix. He said all of his matches have been bangers. Says Mike Tyson wants to fight him, and Conor McGregor wants to fight him. He called them both washed-up fighters, and said people call him a bully. Well, he is a bully, and WWE is his playground. And he heeled on the fans, and he said that he was a future world heavyweight champion. He is a very good heel. And he is a future world champion, as much as I hate to admit it. It is going to happen. And we don't know how this transfer window is going to shake out with more people being moved back and forth between the rosters over the next few weeks. I don't even know that they've said when the transfer window ends. I would just assume the first week in January, but I don't think they've actually articulated that yet. But one obvious match for Logan Paul next year, and it will happen, is Logan Paul against John Cena. That's the match that Logan, if you remember, he texted Triple H 2 years ago that he wanted for WrestleMania. He said, you want to break the internet? Book me and Cena for Mania in LA. And instead, Cena wrestled Austin Theory in one of the biggest flops, one of the biggest wastes in WrestleMania history. Ultimately, I don't think it happens in Mania, but that match is going to happen next year. Liv Morgan was there, as was Rhea Ripley, and Adam Pearce made it official that Rhea Ripley will get her rematch for the Women's World Championship on January 6th. Which is where it makes the most sense to switch the title. I think it's time to put a period on this once and for all. If this feud drags out any longer, it's going to actively start to drag down Rhea Ripley. If it isn't already. I mean, she's still super over, but it's going to actively start to drag down Rhea Ripley. So they have to end this, let Rhea move on to whoever is going to be next going into WrestleMania. Start building up a new program for WrestleMania, whether that be Io Sky, or Bianca Belair, or someone I'm not thinking of. As much as I would love a Rhea and Io match, like if I had to personally choose, between those two for Mania, the two challengers I mentioned before, Rhea against Bianca, that's the play. I'm not saying that's the match that I think is going to happen. I'll talk about Bianca when I get to my predictions later. But Rhea Ripley against Bianca Belair, I mean, that's a WrestleMania match right there. And they could always hold off on Jade and Bianca for later on. You know, you have Rhea win the title on January 6th. You could have Bianca win the Royal Rumble. Like in a perfect world, if I had the power of the pen, that's what I would do. Kevin Owens crashed the party. He had the Winged Eagle title with him. He was once again wearing his trusty tuxedo t-shirt. Even told Michael Cole, I dressed for you. I dressed for the occasion. And he was promptly escorted out of the building. And he, as they were escorting him away, he looks into the camera. He goes, I have the best moveset. Like, you son of a bitch. Playing off of a comment that CM Punk made, which was clearly a not so subtle dig at something that Hangman Page, I don't know what word you would use, that's tweeted since he's on Blue Sky. What do you call a tweet on Blue Sky? What's it called? A cloud? I'm not on there enough. I don't know what the vernacular is. I'm still calling them tweets. We'll call them a cloud. Hangman posted a cloud in the last couple of weeks. Because Logan Paul, there was something about, I think it was when Logan Paul claimed he was retired. And Hangman made a comment about him stealing moves from his moveset because he uses the buckshot. And it just so happened that CM Punk, you know, he was being interviewed on Saturday Night's Main Event backstage. This wasn't on the show, it was on YouTube. And Peter Rosenberg, who did not have a great night, saying that we need to start a campaign for Coco Beware to be put in the Hall of Fame. And then Coco Beware happened to be standing nearby and said, "Hey, motherfucker, I'm already in the Hall of Fame." But he mentioned the word moveset, and CM Punk was like, don't say that word. Like, you sound like a geek. Don't use the word moveset. Anybody in the business, if I hear them using the word moveset, you know, I think they're an idiot. And it just so happened that Hangman Page happened to use the word moveset in a message online within like a week. I'm sure it was all just a coincidence. So there's Kevin Owens, you know, working that into a promo. See, I'm really hoping that these are all just little breadcrumbs that will lead us to a Kevin Owens CM Punk program at some point in 2025. Just like when he posted that image on his Twitter account listing all the upcoming holiday tour dates that he was going to be on, and he put his face over Cody Rhodes' body and the Winged Eagle belt over Cody Rhodes' body. And with all the superstars that were shown in the graphic, the one person that he placed the Christmas tree over was CM Punk. I'm hoping these things are all eventually leading to something very special in 2025. But that was the last we saw of Kevin Owens there at that event. We had the new Bloodline out before Paul Heyman interrupted, and he promoted Tribal Combat between Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa for the Netflix debut. Gunther appeared. He said that he would be happy to smack the smirk off Logan Paul's face, which got him cheered like a babyface. CM Punk was out there in a suit telling Michael Cole when he asked about the favor that Heyman owes him. What's the favor? Punk said that it was Heyman's Netflix password. He needs it so that he can finish watching Heels Season 2, of which he's part. I don't know how many episodes he's in, but he's in that season. I know that. And then Seth Rollins came out. We got a face-to-face and a shoving match before Triple H got in between them to promote their match, which was made official this week for Raw on January 6th. And on that note, there was a report this week from a WrestleVotes backstage pass Q&A about WWE wanting CM Punk in a world championship match at WrestleMania next year. And it said, "What I've heard almost all year is that they want him to be involved in a world title match. I don't know how the puzzle pieces are going to fit, but they want him at the top. I don't think it will be with Cody, so that is one title match out the window." And just because they may have been discussing that internally all year does not mean that is the plan that they have now settled on. I don't think they've settled on much, to be honest with you. But if we go by what is being reported here, that would leave the World Heavyweight title. I floated this very idea Tuesday night on TNT, where, and this is just an idea for how I could see things playing out. This is not necessarily what I would do, because I don't think their match, frankly, needs the world title. But you could have Rollins, you know, beat Punk, which is what I think is going to happen. Rollins beats Punk in the first match on January 6th. Rollins is then anointed the number one contender to the World Heavyweight title at the Royal Rumble, and he beats Gunther to win the title. Punk wins the Rumble, and he ends up challenging Rollins for the belt at WrestleMania. That would be your night one WrestleMania main event. Or maybe he doesn't win the Rumble and he has to win the Elimination Chamber, and then Rollins can go around taunting him for the month leading up to it that, "Hey, you know, I've already punched my ticket to the main event of WrestleMania and you haven't." And Punk can watch him in the WrestleMania main event this year, right? And then ultimately Punk finds his way in after all. And then Punk beats Rollins for the belt at WrestleMania. Not so fast. Don't assume that in that situation, CM Punk would have to get his win right back and beat Seth Rollins. You could have Seth Rollins beat him again. Why not? Cody Rhodes left AEW and he came back to WWE and he beat Seth Rollins 3 straight. Look at Cody. Had he not torn his pec in 2022, I think he would have beaten Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 39. But he got hurt. He only came back at the Royal Rumble, right? And that wasn't long enough, they said. He needs to face more adversity. And in the end, it worked out well for Cody Rhodes. Who's to say they won't do the same thing for CM Punk and make his road to the title that much more challenging, right? There's a risk that comes with putting your world title on CM Punk anyway. The story on Punk in AEW was that he didn't even want the AEW title. That was Tony Khan's idea to put the belt on him. Was that because he doesn't want to work, you know, the kind of schedule that the champion works? I don't know. But like Cody, he got hurt. He missed a good chunk of this year. It was really just the McIntyre feud for him, right? And then War Games. And they've teased a future match with Roman Reigns. Paul Heyman, he still owes him that favor. To that end, there was another report. This one from Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful. And WrestleVotes has backed him up and said that this has been discussed as well. That internally, Roman Reigns against CM Punk has been discussed for WrestleMania 41, which would be the exact opposite of Punk being involved in a championship match on that show. So again, when I tell you that it really sounds like they don't have their plans locked in yet, it doesn't sound like they have their plans locked in yet. And it's almost January. You would think certainly as far as some of the names I'm mentioning here, Roman and Punk, that they would have a sense of, okay, this is what we're doing. But I don't think they do. And that probably has a lot to do with them not hearing from The Rock yet on what he wants to do at WrestleMania. Rock has the chance to do the funniest thing ever, by the way. If he hears about plans for a CM Punk Roman Reigns match, with Punk finally getting his WrestleMania main event that has eluded him for all these years, only for Dwayne to blow it up again and take his spot against Roman Reigns instead. Oh boy. The Rock ruining CM Punk's chances of headlining WrestleMania then, now, and forever. Because you know that if they did Rock against Roman, Cody Rhodes is going to get that other main event. It's not going to CM Punk. Punk and Reigns, you know, look, they've already teased it. I just didn't think they would want to do it this quickly. But what that would mean for Seth Rollins, I don't know. But I just can't see him and Punk being a one and done on an episode of Raw. I don't care how big of an episode it is. If anything, they could rematch them at the Elimination Chamber. I mean, we are going to get more than one match between Punk and Raw. I just cannot imagine it's going to be relegated to January 6th and that's it. Punk cashes in his favor with Heyman, which is for a match with Roman Reigns so that he could finally get top billing at WrestleMania. And then you have Heyman caught between them. Right? Where does his loyalty lie? Then you could do Cody against The Rock if he wrestles, or you could do Cody against Randy Orton for the WWE title, but those would be your two main events for WrestleMania. I would prefer to see Gunther walk into WrestleMania as the World Heavyweight Champion and not take the belt off of him before then, just to feed Bill Goldberg to him in Las Vegas. If Rollins ends up being left out in the cold, you could have Rollins challenge Gunther for the world title at WrestleMania. You know, don't forget also, John Cena is coming back. So that's an option as well. He's going to be in the Royal Rumble. This is going to be his last WrestleMania. WWE may be tempted to put Cena in a championship match, chasing the record, or even put the belt on him. And honestly, it's more the fans, I think, who care about that. I don't think John Cena himself cares. I really don't. I don't think he's obsessed over things like that. This is a guy who has talked about how, in all the years that he has worked in WWE, not once. And think of all the years he was on top, all the world titles he's won. Claims that not once did he ever go to management, did he ever go to Vince and lobby to wrestle any particular person. He just went with the flow. Whatever they wanted him to do, he showed up to work and he did it. That's why do you think Vince McMahon stuck with him for so long, right? I mean, there's a lot of reasons why, right? The Make-A-Wish stuff. He was a great representative for the company and for the brand. But above all else, why do you think Vince McMahon stuck with this guy for so long? It was like a fucking 15-year run because he was the one guy, the one top guy who was not a head case the way that all of his other top guys were. The one guy who he knew he could rely on and not give him grief was John Cena because he was probably the easiest guy in the world to work with, right? He probably never fought back. He never argued against ideas. He showed up. He said, okay, this is what you want me to do. I'll do it to the best of my ability. Maybe he would make suggestions, but from the way he speaks in interviews, I've never gotten the sense that he was a guy who really fought for stuff or fought back against bad creative. I mean, that much is for sure. Think of all the bad creative that we saw on TV while he was there. No wonder. Maybe if he would have fought back against some of that shit, it wouldn't have been so bad. But he was the model employee. So when it comes to something like this, where it's like, you know, 17 world titles, like I really genuinely don't think he gives a shit. But it's a story that a lot of fans want to see told because they love records and when people break them, right? WWE loves that too. They love breaking records and making history. So they're going to want to tell that story. And I'm going to talk about this more in my predictions later. Everything is on the table right now until Rock lets them know what he plans on doing, as was the case this year. Feels like they're always at his mercy. So we're waiting on that, and also waiting to see what other names get shifted around as part of this whole transfer window business that we're in right now. One more note from WrestleVotes. They posted this on Thursday. Sources indicate WWE has discussed introducing a Tribal Chief Championship into the storyline between Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa, similar to the People's Championship presented to The Rock at WrestleMania earlier this year. I had to make sure I wasn't reading WrestleVotes when I saw this. Like, a steaming turd of an idea, and I hope it remains an idea and nothing more. That's what the Ulafala is for. This is not about a championship. It's what the Ulafala represents. That's the prize. That's the championship. The last thing we need is another title in this company. At least the Winged Eagle title has taken the place of the giant logo belt. It's not meant to be permanent. It's not meant to be a permanent separate thing, right? The Rock has his People's Championship. The Rock's belt, it's a total vanity thing. And it's a nice-looking belt, don't get me wrong. It looks nicer than most of the ones they have today. But, I mean, this is getting like, it's getting to be like boxing or MMA with all these belts. It's ridiculous. Yeah, I saw someone suggest that they might want to have a belt eventually replace the Ulafala so that they can sell replicas and make money off them, which would not sit well with some people if they made cheap knockoff Ulafalas to buy. I don't care. I don't give a shit. Even if that's the reason, I don't care. We don't need a belt for this. We don't need a belt just for the Samoans, just so they could keep this story going for another 5 years and milk the cow until it's dry. Right now, it's just an idea. Let John Moxley suffocate it with a plastic bag and let us never hear of this again. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The holidays are upon us. I like the lights and the decorations, even the music. I don't hate the music. Unless I hear All I Want for Christmas by Mariah Carey, then I immediately turn the channel or I flee the store because I just can't handle it. It's everywhere, every year. You know what I find relaxing? One of the free streaming services I watch has a crackling fireplace channel. Seriously, I put that on in the background while I work and it puts me in my happy place. For some of you, it might be a movie night with the family and a mug of hot chocolate. Whatever it may be, therapy is a great way to bring yourself some comfort that never goes away, even when the season changes. Therapy is something that can drastically improve your life in many different ways, whether it's discovering something about yourself that maybe you didn't know about before, or how to cope with some kind of stress in your life that's really dragging you down, or how to set boundaries in your life. Therapy can teach you new ways to cope with the things that may be holding you back from being your best self. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be flexible and suited to your schedule. That's what makes it so convenient. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can switch therapists at any time for any reason at no additional charge. Find comfort this December with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. Some AEW news and notes. First, I wanted to mention John Huber, the former Luke Harper and Mr. Brody Lee, who would have turned 45 years old this past Monday. We're also coming up on the four-year anniversary of his death. And it is every bit as sad now to think back on what happened than it was then. You know, one day he's on TV wrestling Cody Rhodes in a dog collar match, and then 2 months later, he's dead. He never got the chance to perform in front of an actual crowd after he arrived in AEW, which is too bad because he would have gotten a great reaction on that Rochester show the night that he was supposed to debut there. That was his hometown. But that happened to be the first show right after the pandemic shut everything down. That was the show that Cody Rhodes opened with a promo in an empty ring at Daly's Place. But he was part of some really cool stuff in his career. That first Wyatt family run, the Shield match at Elimination Chamber, that ladder match with Dolph Ziggler where they beat the holy hell out of each other. That was during his very brief, as in less than a month, run as the Intercontinental Champion. Squashing Cody for the TNT title. Like, those are the moments that stand out the most to me, and he should have had many more. And there's never a good time for something like that, you know, like what happened to him to happen, but especially around the holidays, I'm sure that's very tough for his family every year. And so I just wanted to make mention of him, because every time we come to this point in the year, given, you know, what happened a few years ago, it's something that I always think about, and that's still very sad. I thought the Holiday Bash episode of Dynamite this week was a good show, certainly better than a lot of the ones we've gotten recently. And they had a loud crowd that was into most everything that they saw, not named Matt Taven and Mike Bennett. And they're running the smaller venues now, and this is one of the benefits of running the smaller venues. If you could pack them in, whether it's 1,500 people or, you know, 2,000 people, whatever it may be, yeah, you could always have a dud of a crowd, but if they're into it, you're going to hear it a lot more. And case in point, the Collision show last night from the Hammerstein Ballroom. So it's a positive move for them. Obviously, it's not positive they have to run smaller venues in the first place, but until they can get their shit figured out, this is a much better situation for them. Mercedes Moné, she retained her TBS championship over Anna Jay. And Mercedes got upset by a fan this week, a fan comment during her Instagram Live, saying that her downgrade needs to be studied. And she told them to shut the fuck up and said that she's richer than she's ever been and having the best matches that she's ever had and that she is living her best life ever. And some people have mocked her for this. And this is what some people don't understand. This woman had the chance to go back to WWE. Okay, she spoke with them. And we don't know what was said in these conversations or the conversation that they had. But she ended up getting a very lucrative offer, I'm sure, from Tony Khan. And she took Tony Khan's offer. Whatever it was that he offered her, she made the choice that she felt was going to make her the happiest. That was more money. And that was the ability to continue wrestling outside of WWE, especially wrestling in Japan, which is something that she had always wanted to do. And she was never going to have the chance to do that working for WWE. If she was lucky, maybe on like a two-day tour one time during the year, but that's about it. Right? She had a great match with Hazuki last weekend defending her New Japan Strong Women's title. I finally got around to seeing it. It was long. I didn't expect it to be that long, but it was a great match. She had her best match yet in AEW last month against Chris Statlander, and it was made official last night on Collision. They're going to run that back at World's End in a couple of weeks. Well, not even a couple of weeks, next weekend. World's End is already here next weekend. I'll have to wait until Wednesday. Maybe I'll do my predictions on the stream on Wednesday. We still have to see how the Continental Classic is going to shake out. We don't know half the card yet. But she had a great match with Stephanie Vaquer at Forbidden Door, a great match with Willow Nightingale at Double or Nothing. And then in between, I mean, she had that terrible match with Britt Baker at All In. But you can't say that she hasn't had great matches since signing with AEW. Are they better than her matches with Bayley? No. I mean, for me, nothing has topped that match they had in Brooklyn in 2015. Because besides just being a great freaking match with a hot crowd, that match had a great story coming into it. There was a lot of history there. Story is the one thing that has been sorely missing from her run in AEW, or at least any good ones. There haven't been any. None of her matches have gotten me invested story-wise, not a single one of them. But if she feels like she's having the best matches of her career right now, then that's how she feels. You know, she called the match with Statlander her second favorite that she's ever had. I assume the first one is the Bayley one in Brooklyn, but she didn't say. People can say that she's not worth the money that Tony Khan is paying her, or that she, you know, she fleeced him for millions of dollars. Is he getting a return on his investment with Mercedes Moné? If he's paying her millions of dollars, I don't see how he can be. She has felt ice cold compared to her Sasha Banks, you know, run in WWE. It's like night and day. But if you were getting paid millions to work once a week and have the freedom to wrestle elsewhere and to live your dream to work the Tokyo Dome for the first time in a few weeks at Wrestle Dynasty, she's going to be wrestling Mina Shirakawa. I mean, she was tearing up the other day when she was talking about being able to work the Dome. I mean, she's not that good of an actress. She's not faking those tears. That's why she signed with AEW. If WWE was willing to match the money, maybe she would have gone back to WWE. But I think she's very content to be where she is right now. I don't think it's like one of these memes where you have the troll face, like the happy mask, but like underneath you see the guy crying. Like, I don't think that's Mercedes Moné. And I also don't think that she is anywhere near the level of star for Tony Khan that she was for Vince McMahon. Both of those things can be true. They finally acknowledged on the air that Kenny Omega is about to make his in-ring return against Gabe Kidd at Wrestle Kingdom on January 5th. That match is a dry run for his return to AEW to see how he feels, how his body reacts, how he looks in the ring. I hope for Tony Khan's sake he looks great, because he needs Kenny back as soon as humanly possible. And if all goes well at the Dome and he feels okay coming out of it, he needs to be back on Dynamite ASAP. Let him come back and beat the piss out of Jack Perry for making fun of him. Get that out of the way. That would be fine as a first match, and then let him be one of the people going after the Death Riders. If they want to do Okada versus Omega, they can save it for Texas in July. And contrary to what he said previously, AEW very much needs Kenny Omega right now, and the sooner they get him back, the better. I don't think he's going to be some huge draw for them. I'm not saying their numbers are suddenly going to spike, you know, to where they were 6 months ago. Their problems are bigger than any one wrestler. The last real draw they had was CM Punk, and they don't have him anymore. But regardless, we need Kenny Omega back on TV as soon as possible. Ricochet is undergoing a character change where he is now playing this obnoxious heel who, or at least the fans are certainly responding to him as a heel now, and he thinks he's better than everybody else. There wouldn't even be an AEW today without Ricochet paving the way for it to happen. At least I hope that comment that he made was in character when he said it, on whatever podcast it was. But on TV, he's acting all cocky now. He's shrieking like a bird. Everyone's making fun of him. The Hurt Syndicate bullied him. They ripped up the business card they gave him. Swerve Strickland was mocking him the other night. The world is making fun of Ricochet after Wednesday night. And that's the point. Some people aren't really grasping this. This is all being done on purpose. It's not to bury him. I mean, he may bury himself with this, but it's not being done to bury him. It's being done to take the character in a different direction. You know, I watched the match he had with Will Ospreay last night on Collision. They were at the Hammerstein Ballroom, and it was a great atmosphere. It was better than their first match on Dynamite. And instead of being showered with streamers, people threw rolls of toilet paper at him, Jimmy Rave style. And he pinned Ospreay after some nefarious tactics. So it should be pretty clear now what they're doing with him, if it wasn't clear enough on Wednesday. And with that, Ricochet earns 3 points in the Continental Classic. That puts him atop the Gold League. He now has 9 points. Everybody else, the closest people behind him have 6 points. He has 9 points. What have I said here before? In WWE, there were very few people on that main roster like Ricochet, right? So he stood out more. They just never pushed him at a high level because they didn't see him at a top level. And you're seeing why. He's not a great promo. That is not his strong suit. But in AEW, they have an entire roster full of Ricochets, so he doesn't feel as special. I mean, you can flip on Rampage any given Friday and see 3 Ricochets, all without the bird noises. So if all he does is go out there and have great matches, like if it doesn't go any deeper than that, then he's going to stagnate. They're trying to add some depth to his character. They're trying something different with him instead of him just being the guy who goes out and flips. Is it going to work? The jury is still out, but I mean, based on the reaction he got in New York last night, I would say it seems to be working so far. So let's see where it goes. If you want to see an example of great character work, though, I'll tell you who you should be watching. You should be watching Toni Storm. That's who you should be watching. They had the Portrait of a Rock Star segment on Wednesday night, which was a vignette, I guess, promo, whatever you want to call it. It was taped in a hotel room with RJ City interviewing Toni Storm, who is still playing it up like she has no memory whatsoever of ever having a run before in AEW. So is it an amnesia angle, or, as I think, is it going to turn out to be a case where it's timeless Toni Storm putting in the best performance of her career when we eventually get the return of timeless Toni Storm? That's what I think is going on here. But, I mean, she is totally committed to the gimmick in a way that I have to admire. She pulls it off. She makes it work. Is it goofy? Is it over the top? Yes. But you know what? It's no more or less goofier than other goofy gimmicks that we've seen. And I guarantee you, 9 times out of 10, whoever is playing the goofball is not doing as good of a job or as convincing of a job as Toni Storm. And so you still, you know, there's still people who are bitching, like Brian Alvarez, I think, still complaining about her wrestling last week on Rampage. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because it's leading to the actual return of Timeless Toni Storm. So, punk rocker Toni Storm wrestling on Rampage last week and then wrestling on Collision, like, it doesn't matter. People need to let it go. It's not a big deal. We had 2 more matches in the Continental Classic on Wednesday. Shelton Benjamin beat the Beast Mortos. And Benjamin continues to look impressive since debuting, but it could not hold a candle to what we got with Will Ospreay and Darby Allin. First time ever match. Those two went out there and they killed it. And Darby nearly killed himself. He did a coffin drop to the apron that Ospreay avoided. It's a spot we've seen Darby do before, but this was the most sickening of them all. This was the most sickening of all the landings that we have seen. And it's Darby, so, I mean, he's going to do what he wants, and it's not like Tony Khan has the balls to say no to him. There was a Styles Clash that Ospreay delivered from the apron to the floor. Yes, I know. How was that not the finish? Welcome to AEW. They still had a great match, though. The fans were hotter for this than anything else on the show. And in the end, Darby picks up his biggest singles win of 2024 and his biggest win since Sting's retirement match easily at Revolution. The Death Riders angle, what can I say? I mean, it continues to bore the shit out of me. The 4-way at World's End at least should be very good given the talent involved, but this Death Rider stuff just fucking sucks. I'm sorry. It just sucks. FTR, who were abducted and left for dead by them last week, they have promised to be medically cleared in time for their Fight for the Fallen show on New Year's Day. That's going to be the first Dynamite to simulcast live on Max, and they said they are not coming alone. Are they bringing Bret Hart with them? I wish. Actually, I don't think Bret Hart wants to have anything to do with this Death Rider shit. I don't think if you went to Bret Hart and said, what do you think about the Death Rider stuff? He would look at you like you have a third eye. A fucking Cyclops eye in the middle of your head. Like he's watching this shit. Give me a break. But no, I mean, they said they're not coming alone. The show that night is in Asheville, North Carolina. That's where they live, but also where Adam Copeland lives. And no doubt, Adam Copeland is making his return on that show. So that at least introduces another big name into the story against these guys. But, you know, they did a tag team match on Wednesday. You know, can they coexist with Moxley, Pac, and Yuta challenging Orange Cassidy, Jay White, and Hangman Page? Hangman and White, they could not get along. And Hangman walked out on his team before eventually coming back, and then in the end, all their bickering cost them the win, and they all look like a bunch of babbling idiots. And so this is how they are promoting the big four-way match for World's End next weekend, where absolutely nobody believes that Jon Moxley is going to lose his championship, but at least we'll get, hopefully, a very good match out of it. Now, I mentioned the Max deal and the first simulcast on January 1st. We now have more clarity on what this means for legacy AEW content. In a press release, Warner Brothers Discovery announced that AEW Dynamite and Collision will be simulcast live on Max, starting with the Fight for the Fallen episode of Dynamite on New Year's Day. The shows will still air live on their regular broadcast homes, TBS and TNT, respectively. In addition to this new way to watch, Dynamite and Collision will also be available to watch on demand on Max after their live airings. Dynamite, Collision, Rampage, and all AEW pay-per-view library content through the end of 2024, representing more than 700 hours of AEW action, will be made available on Max on a rolling basis. At launch, all AEW Dynamite episodes and pay-per-views from the company's inaugural 2019 year will be available, as well as more than 2 months of the most recent AEW programming that aired across WBD's networks. So if you want to watch those first episodes of Dynamite, and maybe you shouldn't, I don't know, because I went back and I've watched actually on their YouTube channel some old clips from those first, I'd say, couple of months. of Dynamite, and boy, I mean, you talk about night and day. Not night and day, even just in the visual presentation of the show, let alone, you know, creative and crowds and all that. It is just, it's like two different companies. It really paints, when you look at them side by side, paints a picture that just makes you wonder what the hell happened. But if you want to go back and watch those first episodes of Dynamite and the first pay-per-views, which includes the first Double or Nothing that had that great Cody Rhodes-Dustin Rhodes match, which is still one of the best matches in AEW history, you will be able to watch it on Max starting on January 1st. And then over time, they will be adding more to the archives. It's not just going to be a single content dump. But that's how the WWE Network was, right? They didn't have everything on there right away. They added stuff on a rolling basis, and then eventually they just stopped adding classic content altogether. At least on the Peacock they did, which was very disappointing. I guess that's why we now have the Vault channel on YouTube. Rolling basis, by the way, that does not mean that they add stuff and then take it off, like Netflix does with a lot of their movies. Rolling just means it's going to take some time to get the entire library up there. And eventually when they start adding new pay-per-views on there for purchase, instead of going through a third party like Triller or YouTube, you can buy the pay-per-views right on Max if you're a subscriber. You can buy them at a discounted price. What that price point will be, they still have not figured that out. And again, they're not going to be doing pay-per-views on Max until later in the year, so it's still a ways off. But that's how that's going to work. You'll still have to pay for your Max subscription and then an additional fee for each show. But yeah, they say discounted. What is that going to look like, though? If the pay-per-views are $50, and if you're, you know, if you're a Max subscriber, you can get it for $40 on top of whatever you're already paying for Max. It's like, eh. I mean, okay, yeah, it's a discount, but that's not great. But if it's like $30, right? Now you're getting into a $20 discount on the actual pay-per-view price. You know, I mean, that's a little bit better. We just don't know yet because they haven't ironed out all the details. And so, with that out of the way, it is that time of year on the Sound Off where I give my predictions for the year to come in wrestling, and I look back at the ones that I got right and the ones that I got wrong the year before. Who else does that? Who goes back and lets you make fun of him for what he got so very wrong? This guy, that's who. But it wasn't all bad. Let's start with my 2024 predictions. I predicted that WWE will sign a media rights deal with Disney for Raw, and the show would move from USA Network to the FX Network. Raw stays on Mondays at 3 hours, while SmackDown moves to Tuesdays, and NXT moves to Thursdays. They signed a deal with Netflix, not Disney, and the shows all stayed on the exact same nights that they air on right now. So that one was very wrong. I predicted that AEW will sign a new deal for a healthy rights increase with Warner Brothers Discovery for 3 years at double what they are being paid now, and the company will turn a profit for the first time in 2024. This one I nailed almost bang on, except for the being profitable part. That's not likely to happen until next year. But they did sign with Warner Brothers Discovery for an increase around double what they were believed to be making before for what is believed to be 3 years with an option for a fourth year. I predicted that MJF would stay with AEW and wrestle Adam Cole again at Wembley Stadium, but this time it would not be for the AEW World Championship. MJF did stay with AEW and he is wrestling Adam Cole again, and it won't be for the championship, but it's at World's End, not Wembley Stadium. Cole, he didn't even make it back into the ring until October. I predicted that Swerve Strickland would become the AEW World Champion in 2024, and that it would happen in Las Vegas at Double or Nothing, and that he would headline Wembley Stadium defending the title against Will Ospreay. He did become the AEW World Champion, but at Dynasty, which was the month before Double or Nothing, and he did headline Wembley Stadium, but with Bryan Danielson, not with Will Ospreay. That happened at Forbidden Door. I predicted that Nigel McGuinness would come out of retirement for a match on that Wembley show against Bryan Danielson. I was mostly right. He did come out of retirement at Wembley Stadium, and he did wrestle Bryan Danielson, but he wrestled Bryan Danielson on Dynamite a few weeks later, and it still blows my mind how awful the buildup was for that match. Just terrible. I predicted that after Bryan Danielson retires as a full-time performer, Tony Khan would make him the new president of Ring of Honor, very similar to New Japan making Hiroshi Tanahashi their new president, and that Tony would give Bryan creative control over ROH, which would end up on the CW network after Warner Brothers Discovery once again expresses absolutely no interest in wanting anything to do with Ring of Honor. That did not happen yet. I still think Bryan Danielson in a role like that in ROH is something that could eventually happen. But it did not happen, and Ring of Honor still has no TV deal, although somebody got a TV deal with the CW. It just wasn't Ring of Honor. It was NXT. I predicted that CM Punk would win the men's Royal Rumble match, but fall short in his quest to win the World Heavyweight title from Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. But then Damian Priest would cash in and win the World Heavyweight Championship. I was wrong on Punk winning the Rumble. Even if he didn't get hurt, he wasn't going to win the Rumble. But I was right about Damian Priest cashing in his Money in the Bank at WrestleMania to win the World Heavyweight title. I predicted that Cody Rhodes would win the Elimination Chamber match to get another crack at Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, and this time he would win the championship. Cody won the Royal Rumble again, not the Elimination Chamber, but he did finally beat Roman Reigns, so I got that right. I predicted that Bayley would win the Women's Royal Rumble match, which would also feature a cameo from AJ Lee. Bayley did win the Rumble, but we are still waiting on that AJ Lee cameo. I predicted that Mercedes Moné would be the big TNA surprise at their Hard to Kill pay-per-view, and she would spend a few months working there and wrestling her friend, Trinity, for the Knockouts title, but ultimately would end up back in WWE. I was wrong on all fronts. No Mercedes in TNA, no matches with Trinity, and she signed with AEW, not with WWE. I predicted that Julia would re-sign with Stardom, and that we would get a match between Mercedes and Julia, but it would happen after WWE and Stardom enter into a working relationship. And as part of that relationship, Mercedes would be able to go to Japan and wrestle her. Well, I mean, here's a big bowl of nope. They kind of have a working relationship with Rossi Ogawa, but he is no longer part of Stardom, so that's with Marigold. Not with Stardom. AEW has the relationship with Stardom. I predicted that LA Knight would be the man to dethrone Logan Paul to win the United States Championship at WrestleMania. He did beat Logan Paul for the U.S. title, but it was at SummerSlam, not WrestleMania. I predicted that Nick Aldis would wrestle his first match in a WWE ring at WrestleMania, and he would do so against Randy Orton. And before the year is up, he would be back in the ring on a regular basis, with William Regal replacing him as the general manager of SmackDown. That did not happen, and Nick Aldis is still waiting for that first WWE match. I don't think it would be a bad idea, though, if they ever want to move Aldis out of the GM role. I think Regal would be great. I predicted that Gunther would win the World Heavyweight title at the Bash in Berlin, but only after dropping the Intercontinental title to Chad Gable. Oh, that's funny. Well, maybe in some alternate timeline that could have happened, but Gunther did win the World Heavyweight title, though, but poor Chad Gable, man, he's still waiting for gold. I predicted that Ricky Starks would leave AEW and make the jump to WWE. In fairness to me, I think Ricky thought that too, until Tony Khan picked up his option year and then stopped him from doing so. I predicted that Cody Rhodes would defend the WWE Championship against Randy Orton at SummerSlam, while Roman Reigns would have a match with Solo Sikoa, and Solo would beat him, officially putting a stake in the heart of the bloodline. And I said they would hold off until WrestleMania the following year, that being next year in Las Vegas, to do something with Roman Reigns and CM Punk. I was wrong on the first two. I mean, the bloodline is going to live on for at least another 5 years. But boy, that Punk and Roman at Mania 41 prediction, that's looking pretty good right now, isn't it? I was a year early on that one. I predicted that in Sting's final match at Revolution, He and Darby Allin would challenge Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara for the AEW Tag Team titles and win them. And then the titles would be held up in a tournament to crown new champions. And those new champions would be a reunited Adam Copeland and Christian Cage. Sting and Darby, they went into Revolution as the defending champions, but they did win, and the titles were held up at a tournament, but it was won by the Young Bucks, who then went on to not defend those titles for over 4 months. Great stuff. I predicted that with Sting gone, Tony Khan would bring Bill Goldberg into AEW to have that retirement match that he never got in WWE. That did not happen. And I am not shedding any tears over it. I predicted that Jamie Hayter would make her AEW return and regain her women's championship, but not until All In at Wembley. She returned at Wembley. She didn't win the title there. She actually hasn't done much of anything since returning. So I was mostly wrong on that one. I predicted that Kazuchika Okada would sign a new deal to stay with New Japan Pro Wrestling. This is the one that shocked me the most. He left New Japan and signed with AEW. I never thought I would see the day that he would leave. I guess I shouldn't have been too surprised with the kind of money that Tony Khan has thrown around. And, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura, he left New Japan years ago for WWE. But Okada was, I mean, he was the franchise player there. I just never thought he would actually leave. And I predicted that Bray Wyatt would headline the 2024 class of the WWE Hall of Fame and that he would be joined by Paul Heyman, Lex Luger, Bam Bam Bigelow, Demolition, and either AJ Lee or Eve Torres would be the female inductee. Well, I got Heyman right. That's the only one I got right, but I mean, they were in Philadelphia this year, so that really should have been pretty obvious that he was going in. So not great, not terrible either, but not great at all. I was right about a bunch of things. I just got the dates and the events wrong. I will try to do better, though, with my 2025 predictions. So let's get into those, and then you guys can chime in with your own and let me know what you think. But let's get into the year to come in wrestling in 2025. Now, John Cena is having his retirement tour next year. This is the final time that we are going to get to see him in the ring. This is it. And I think he's sticking to his guns on this. You know, he's got enough irons in the fire in Hollywood that it's not like he's going to get bored. Okay, he's going to have plenty going on. And the main story should be his quest to win his 17th world championship to make him the all-time leader. Ric Flair has more world titles, but they acknowledge 16 as the record. Cena's already tied for that. He wins one more, he's got the record all to himself. The question is not, is he going to challenge for the record? It's, when will he be challenging for the record? A lot of people think that it should be at WrestleMania. One thing I will predict is that John Cena is going to win the Royal Rumble match in 2025. That is how he earns himself a title match at WrestleMania against the champion of his choosing. They're going to tease Cena and Cody. They're going to make you think that it could be John Cena and Cody Rhodes, but ultimately it will be Gunther. John Cena challenges Gunther at WrestleMania in Las Vegas for the World Heavyweight Championship, and John Cena loses to Gunther. And I know some people might say, you know, hey, Cena should win his last WrestleMania match. He hasn't won a match at WrestleMania in 8 years. The last time he won a match at WrestleMania, he won with Nikki Bella. Okay, that's how long it's been. He's due. But no, he tries to win title number 17 and he fails because it would be a big mistake for him to win the title on that show. The story is the chase. The story is the redemption arc. Cena has not had great luck in the ring over the last 5 or 6 years. Go look at his win-loss record, mainly in singles matches. The last time we saw him, he was destroyed by Solo Sikoa. Cena returns on Raw January 6th, right? The big Netflix debut, he's being advertised for that show. He's there, I predict, to be the first man to declare for the Royal Rumble. He's going to try to turn his luck around, and he wins. And then he could wrestle Logan Paul in Toronto at Elimination Chamber, and he can beat Logan Paul. He's building momentum heading into WrestleMania, and then he loses. And it seems like all hope is lost. It's over. That was his chance, and he blew it. Now the real story can begin. and he has to fight his way back into title contention just like anybody else would. And he does, and he gets his rematch at SummerSlam, two nights at MetLife Stadium next year. And in the main event of one of those two nights, he gets another crack at the World Heavyweight title, and this time he wins number 17. That's how you tell this story. You make that the story for John Cena in 2025. And you don't do that by blowing through it at WrestleMania. He doesn't need a long run with it. He doesn't even need to have the title for his final match. It would make the outcome far too predictable. I think WWE builds an entire live special around his final match in December, maybe something on Netflix. It needs to be treated like a PLE. Nothing on TV, no commercial breaks. And his final match, fittingly, will come against Randy Orton. There's just too much history between them for so many years for them not to have a big match next year. And if it's not going to be at WrestleMania, then I think it should be his final match. But you know who else is having a farewell tour in 2025? The ace of New Japan Pro Wrestling, Hiroshi Tanahashi, has announced that next year will be his final full year. His final match will take place at Wrestle Kingdom in January of 2026. And I don't know how it happens. I don't even know where or when it happens. Okay, WWE is planning a lot more international shows next year. Japan could be one of those places. This may be far out there, but I'm going to predict that it will happen. For the first time ever, with both of their careers winding down at the exact same time, I predict that we get a match between John Cena and Hiroshi Tanahashi. It has been a very strange year in the world of wrestling. Okay, we have seen things over the last couple of years that I never in my wildest dreams thought that we would see. Collaborations that I never thought we would see. Scandals that I never thought would blow up in the way that they have. This is one that would be cool to see. I'm not saying it has to happen. They need to do this, right? WWE doesn't need to do anything. WWE is making money no matter what they do. But this is one that would be cool to see. It would be sad because neither of them are anywhere near their peak in the ring anymore, but it would be cool to see it happen one time. I predict that when Bill Goldberg wrestles his final match in 2025, it will take place at WrestleMania, and he will go down at the hands of Bron Breakker. A lot of final matches happening in wrestling. John Cena, Goldberg, Tanahashi. Mako Satomura is wrestling her final match in April. And yet Chris Jericho, he continues on. I predict that CM Punk will finally get his WrestleMania main event. It will be against Roman Reigns on night one of WrestleMania. He will leverage his favor from Paul Heyman to do so. And he will lose. Meanwhile, on night two, The Rock will follow through on his tease earlier this year to challenge Cody Rhodes for the WWE Championship, a match that Cody will win. I predict that Sheamus will finally win the Intercontinental title in 2025, and he will go on to eventually lose that title to Ilya Dragunov. I predict that Big E will make his return to the ring as a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble match, and he will eliminate Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. I predict that Tiffany Stratton will cash in her Money in the Bank to win the WWE Women's Championship from Nia Jax on the first three-hour episode of SmackDown on January 3rd. Charlotte Flair will win the Women's Royal Rumble match and will go on to challenge Tiffany for her title at WrestleMania, but as a heel. You know, Charlotte hasn't won a Royal Rumble in, it's going to be 5 years. So it's not like, she won last year. She won the year before. In WWE world, it's like, oh my God, it's been far too long. We need Charlotte Flair to win the Rumble. I think that's what's going to happen. I predict that Naomi will be revealed as the person who attacked Jade Cargill, and Jade will deal with her, but be upset that Bianca allowed Naomi to fill in for her as tag team champion. There needs to be some spark to lead to the eventual WrestleMania match that I do think we will get between Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill. The only thing is, out of all of the potential WrestleMania opponents, like if I listed them out for Bianca Belair next year, Jade is dead last on the list of matches I'd like to see. Like, I would love Bianca against Rhea Ripley. That's my number one. Even Bianca against Charlotte Flair, I think, would be great. But Jade is the one that I think that we're going to get. I predict that Lyra Valkyria will become the first ever women's intercontinental champion on January 6th, the same night that Becky Lynch returns to WWE, and Becky will challenge Lyra for her IC title at WrestleMania. I predict that Alexa Bliss will return to WWE as a surprise entrant in the Women's Royal Rumble as her old goddess character and not as a member of the Wyatt Six, at least not right away. I predict that Zilla Fatu will earn the WWE ID designation and will end up in NXT at some point in 2025. He doesn't have much more than 30 matches under his belt so far. He's still very young into his career. And I would hate to lose him in House of Glory. He's been great, but it's not going to be that much longer before they snatch him up. I predict that Jordynne Grace will once again appear as a surprise entrant in the Women's Royal Rumble match, but this time she will do so as a full-fledged member of the WWE main roster after her TNA deal expires. No NXT run for her. She has already had enough time in NXT. I predict that Darby Allin will be the man to dethrone Jon Moxley to win the AEW World Championship, and he will do so at Revolution, 1 year after Sting's retirement match, only for Christian Cage to finally cash in his world title contract that Wednesday on Dynamite after the Death Riders lay a beatdown on Darby and Christian wins the AEW World title. That way, you know, Darby gets his moment as champion and then gets written off so he can go climb Mount Everest. And we're also going to get that Adam Copeland-Christian Cage reunion next year, but that won't happen until after Christian loses the title. And when they do, they will win the AEW tag team titles. I predict that Timeless Toni Storm will return in time to challenge Mariah May for the AEW Women's World Championship in Australia at Grand Slam and will win back the title, only to drop it to Jamie Hayter at Double or Nothing. The same event where Tony pinned Jamie 2 years ago. Well, as of next year, it'll be 2 years ago. To win the championship. I predict that Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada will rekindle their rivalry and will pay it off with a major match at Globe Life Field in July at All In. I predict that Samoa Joe will leave AEW to go back to WWE and inject new life into the Bloodline story, which is not to say that the story is not still working for them. It's still their crown jewel, and they have Jacob Fatu in there as well, who's going to do more as time goes on. But you can't tell me that adding Samoa Joe to that group would not instantly breathe new life into those segments. I think he would be fantastic. In the most obvious predictions, I think, of all the ones I've listed here, I predict that Ricky Starks will exit AEW so fast when his contract is up that he will leave one of those plumes of smoke behind him that you see in cartoons. And he will immediately sign with WWE. Maybe a little less predictable is that I think as that happens, Austin Theory will leave WWE and he will sign with AEW. And I'm not so sure that he'll have that much more success than he has currently in WWE, but it's pretty clear that Triple H doesn't exactly see in Austin Theory what Vince McMahon did. I predict that Hook will leave AEW and end up in NXT before the year is over. I predict that Joe Hendry will finally win the TNA World Heavyweight title at their Genesis pay-per-view next month. And a few weeks later, he will be a surprise entrant in the men's Royal Rumble match so that when he walks out there, he can walk out with the TNA World Heavyweight title. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the only reason why they waited this long to put the fucking belt on him in the first place, which is a pretty stupid reason to hold off and potentially kill all of his momentum before putting the title on him. But I think that's the play here. And finally, I usually give my WWE Hall of Fame picks. I predict that the class of 2025 will be headlined by none other than John Cena. Given that this is his final year in the ring and this year is all about celebrating his career, he has cleared his schedule, so they know there's not going to be any scheduling conflicts for him next year around WrestleMania time. And there's no bigger headliner that they can induct right now who isn't already in outside of The Rock. And I don't think The Rock is going in next year. So I think Cena headlines. Sid Vicious. He passed away a number of months ago. He should have already been in. The only man outside of Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens now, I guess, to hold the Winged Eagle Championship not to be in the WWE Hall of Fame. It's ridiculous. Haku will also be inducted into the Hall of Fame. You listen to anybody who knew him, anybody who worked with him or came up in the era that he came up in, pound for pound, the toughest and the most feared man in wrestling. A champion of multiple promotions, including WWE. And now, with all three of his sons under contract there, they got Tama Tonga, they got Tongaloa, they got Hikuleo. The timing just feels right for them to induct their father into the Hall of Fame. Mickie James, 6-time women's champion in WWE, 5-time TNA Knockouts champion, and she's attached to this new LFG reality series that they're debuting next year. She's going to be one of the judges, I guess you would say. Her husband, Nick Aldis, is the easy pick to do the induction. I think she gets the female nod next year. And I float this one every year, and I'm going to float it again, because I don't think there's ever been as good of a chance of it happening as there is right now. Last year, it was the U.S. Express going in as a tag team. This year, I think it's Demolition. Axe and Smash. Smash, okay, Barry Darso, he said a few months ago that they were invited to attend the Hall of Fame last year in L.A. as guests, but they had a prior commitment and they couldn't make it. That's the first sign of any kind of thaw in the relationship. It's the Triple H effect. That's what Smash said also. He figures because Vince is gone and Triple H is the one running it now, that's why they extended the invitation for them to come out as guests. They don't need to be there as guests. Okay? They don't need to be on the guest list. They need to be on the list. And every year that goes by is possibly 1 year too late. Okay? Look at Sid. I think it finally happens in 2025. So that's my prediction for the Hall of Fame class. John Cena, Sid Vicious, Haku, Mickie James, and Demolition. And if they were going to have a celebrity inductee, you know, I would say Cyndi Lauper, but I have to imagine at this point that they've asked her before. I can't imagine they haven't asked her. And the fact that she hasn't been in tells me that she, for whatever reason, just doesn't want to go in or feels she's not worthy of going in. But she really is. When you think of celebrities, I mean, there's a lot of celebrities you can put in. Regis, right? Regis Philbin. He was a huge friend to WWE, a huge wrestling fan. He would have them on his show all the time. Arsenio Hall was another one. But of all the celebrities that you could argue would be worthy of celebrity induction status into the Hall of Fame. You know, Cyndi Lauper and Mr. T, it's not hyperbole to say that without their involvement in that first WrestleMania and the MTV specials around there, right, late 84 into early 85, that without them, it could have changed the entire course of WWE. She is that vital of a piece of their history that if any celebrity truly it deserved induction into their Hall of Fame, Mr. T is already in. Cyndi Lauper deserves to be in. So if I had a list of celebrity name, it would be her. But I don't know if that's ever going to happen because I'm shocked it hasn't already. I just have to think there's a reason for that. But those are my predictions for 2025. So you can let me know yours. Let me know if you agree or if you disagree or if you have predictions of your own. I want to hear from you guys. We're going to get back to the mailbag hopefully next week. The plan for next week, now that we got the predictions out of the way, is in addition to the news of the week, which will include the fallout from World's End, which is next Saturday night, and I may also talk about Wrestle Dynasty and do some predictions as well. Next week, we'll talk about some of the big stories of the year, And I may give out some end of the year awards, which I did not do last year. So that'll be next Sunday, episode 894. There will be a podcast, so you don't have to worry about that. And then the plan is to be live on YouTube for another New Year's Eve stream on Tuesday night, December 31st, counting down the top matches of 2024. We've done the New Year's Eve stream each of the last 4 years, so we're going to do it again. I always have fun hanging out with you guys, but this time we'll also talk some of the best wrestling matches all year. I haven't decided yet if I'm going to narrow the list down to 10 or 15. I think I did 15 last year. But I'm still going through my list. I have a lot more than that listed on there. And so that's the content coming up between now and the end of the year. And then we start the new year off with a bang. Of course, we got the Raw on Netflix. There's going to be a lot going on as we head into WrestleMania season. I hope you'll join me for all of it. And I hope that you will all have a very happy Hanukkah, very Merry Christmas, whatever you may or may not be celebrating this week, Festivus, whatever it may be. I hope you have a very happy holiday. Thank you for all of your support all throughout the year. And I will see you back here for episode 894 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solo Monster Sounds Off.
I look at what Triple H is doing with Shinsuke Nakamura right now. All due respect to Shin, the spot that he now finds himself in as the United States Champion on SmackDown, that's the fucking spot that Chad Gable should be. Do I have any faith that he's going to suddenly rebound and go on a win streak, or he's going to end up with the United States Championship? I don't. All the times that I thought, okay, this is going to be Chad Gable's moment. This is the story to tell. This is the direction I think that this is going to go in. Oh, he certainly has to win the title here. Oh, no. He didn't win there, but he has to win the title there. He comes out a loser. That poor little girl he's got at home. Never forget the tears in her eyes when daddy got beat by Gunther. Every time this guy goes in there, I picture his daughter at home, and all of a sudden she's watching the show and she's all happy to see her dad challenging for a championship or wrestling in the main event, and he loses again. Ooh. Poor girl's gonna be traumatized. Her father never wins. Probably gets picked on at school, this poor girl.
The Solo Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007.
Bringing you the good, the bad, and the ugly. Check out the weekly live streams, bonus content for subscribers, and follow The Solo Monster on Facebook, Instagram, and X. The Solo Monster.
I love you, Solo.